Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen's been raining off my cup. Pink via deckables to see Kalein fire them to up. Gate me canes a flint. The drop.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold. This week, we do have an interview with Jay Rodriguez from part one of my interview with Jay Rodriguez from For the Straight Guy. What a great interview. What a great guy. I'm now going to clear my throat because there's something stuck in there and it's annoying me. Ready? Okay, that wasn't that bad. So, yeah, so it was, we had so much fun. I really love talking to him. So we have that today. I want you to know I am doing a tour for Israel we could talk about it, but, you know, I know you're sick of hearing about it, but I'm going to be in Boca on Thursday night. At the Boca Black Box with my friends Rich Voss, Aaron Berg, Olga Nehmer. And we are doing a stand-up show to support the Friends of the IDF. Oh, this weekend, Friday and Saturday, I am in Beverly, Massachusetts. Beverly, Massachusetts. Beverly. Yeah, so I'm at Beverly, Massachusetts at Off Cabot. One show Friday at 8. Two shows Saturday, 6:30 and 9. Woo, Massachusetts. You know I love Massachusetts. So I'm working lots, and we have more of the Stand Up for Israel shows that we're going to be announcing. And I just want you to know that yesterday, I'm recording this on Monday, Martin Luther King's birthday, and Martin Luther King, civil rights activist, friend of the Jews, and Jews, friend of Martin Luther King Jr. So Hopefully someone somewhere will do a little dive today and say, wow, Martin Luther King Jr. was against anti-Semitism and was supported by so many Jewish people. Maybe I'll rethink my hatred of Jews. Could that happen? Judy, what are you talking about? No. 100 days of these innocent people who were in their beds sleeping, at a concert for peace, murdered, raped, set on fire, beheaded, mutilated. And there's still 136 of them. And, you know, oh, I just wanted to say one thing. Fuck you, Susan Sarandon. Okay, I can't. I really can't. I cannot stand her. I cannot. Like, I can't even look at her with her little smug look. Like, what a fucking idiot. So she gets on my last gay and lesbian nerve. But, you know, even writing, even posting about the 100 days since October 7th and that there are still hostages. And I get hate. I get hate. People, they can't even acknowledge. They can't even acknowledge that Israel has a right to defend itself and that these hostages are innocent people. You know, they were all, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. They were all peaceniks. They were all, you know, some of these kibbutzes had Palestinian workers on them. Like, I just don't, the fact that these, you know, and the term pro-Palestinian just drives me up a fucking wall. It's not like we're against Palestinians. We're against Hamas. We're against Hamas. We want to free the Palestinians from Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization. Like, stop saying the Israel-Gaza war or the Israeli-Palestinian war. It's the Israel and Hamas war, okay? That's what it is. You hear any IDF person, they want to free the Palestinians from Hamas. And let me tell you something, you want a fucking ceasefire? Release the hostages and stop saying that your only goal on earth is to eradicate the Jews and get rid of the state of Israel, okay? Those things, and you're done. And then there's a ceasefire. Ugh, it's just so fucking annoying. I can't take, it's like really annoying. But I had great shows this weekend. City Winery in New York, packed to the gills. Great crowd at City Winery Philly, almost sold out, but what a great crowd. And a lot of Jews who want to laugh and want to talk about this stuff and want to be in a room where we can use humor as a coping mechanism, since we've used it as a coping mechanism for our entire existence, pretty much. So, yeah. New York Times really getting on my nerves. A lot of opinions that are just ridiculous. Although I read it. I read the other side. I do read the other side because I want to know what they're saying. Also, the Iowa caucuses, which are tonight, because this is Monday that I'm recording this. So we'll know the results by the time you hear this. And it just fucking causes me stress. Like Iowa caucus, New Hampshire, like the fact that that fucking piece of shit gets one vote, that he gets one vote. It just drives me up a fucking wall. So, you know, I'm stressed out. I don't know if you guys are. I've been meditating. I have been working out. My knee's doing very well, as the people who came to my show can. I was standing, I was walking around. It still hurts. It hurts, it clicks, it's tight, it's, you know, I can't do everything, but definitely it's fun to be able to stand up straight because I couldn't bend that leg for so many years. But so, yeah, my shows have been great, great audiences. I just want to give a shout out in Philly I met a guy named Sam who told me he listens to the end every time. He's a huge fan. Sam, I loved meeting you. And thank you, thank you, thank you. He also told me not to change the name of Kill Me Now, even though I really want to rebrand. Because I feel like Kill Me Now, like it's, I know it's how my attitude, but I do talk about other things. So please write to me or DM me or whatever and let me know what you think and if you have any great names that you can think of. Like, you know, It's Judy's Podcast or something like that. I don't know. What else do I have to tell you? I don't know. I just, yeah, I just want to say we got to, you know, Jews have shown up historically for all marginalized people. Please show up for it. Come on. And what we've contributed to the world, oh, it's just so fucking annoying. It's just, it's mind-boggling, the anti-Semitism. Anyway, but we're not gonna be negative, are we? Yes, I am. So I just, you know, I want you to forget about everything for the next 40 minutes or what. I don't know how long this the part one interview is, but it's probably about that. Because Jay Rodriguez is awesome. And we had a great, great conversation, and you're going to love it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my interview with Jay Rodriguez.
That's me, and I'm really hoping she does not.
Oh, I love her. Oh, my God, she's so cute.
I have a dog, too, but he's still at the sitter because I just flew in yesterday, and she's sick, the sitter's sick. And so she's like, can I just hold on to him another day? I don't want to get you sick. I said, sure. And somehow when my dog's not around, my cat's like extra vocal. So I don't know.
Wait, this is a question that I've never asked anyone, but can a pet carry a cold and make you sick?
I don't know if there's transference, but I think there was a short window of time where we thought COVID was like dogs were getting, but dogs are getting, you know, like their own version of some kind of respiratory thing. But I think she's just annoyed that I wasn't here for a week. And she's Siamese, she's long hair Siamese. So apparently they're very vocal, which I'm used to, just not usually the dog plays kind of like defense. Like he basically wrangles her if she's being too noisy. So I don't have to worry about it. It's very bizarre.
You know, if people, ladies, gentlemen, they, thems, if you don't recognize that voice, then you've been living in a cave, especially if you're one of my fans and you're a gay. Everyone, I'm sorry. Jay, you don't know about the Jew bell, which anytime I mention anything remotely Jewish, I ring a bell, you know. Just to show how much we've contributed to the world. And now it has even more meaning, but I might have to have a new bell, which is a gay bell.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Because this is going to be a very gay show. I don't know. It'd be very.
It might have to be like some kind of like, you know, xylophone or some kind of deals.
It'll have to have a melody. Right?
Or something.
Yeah. Anyway, ladies, gentlemen, they, thems, Emmy Award winner, actor, singer, cabaret, Broadway. I mean, amazing. So talented. Culture expert.
Listen, I feel like just a typical Puerto Rican with 16 jobs. And if you want to stay in this industry a long time, you got to do it all. So
a typical Puerto Rican with 16 jobs. Our guest today is the one and only Jay Rodriguez, everyone. Jay,
Jay,
we have a mutual friend who is
probably
the meanest. Yeah, who is the meanest person on earth, Carson Kressley. Just the sarcasm dripping. He's so fucking funny. And
yeah,
I love him so much.
We just did a Queer Eye reunion in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, because he's from Allentown. He had the hookup. And he orchestrated an entire stage spectacular where the talent just showed up and there were all these moving parts that looked like we'd rehearsed the show for months.
He's unbelievable. He is so talented. You know, he's funny, he's engaging, but his eye is I'm telling you, and I didn't even put together Queer Eye, but he has such a fucking eye. It's not even funny.
I can tell you why that is. He's always listening. Judy, he will remember where you're from, your kid's name, something interesting about the town you're from. It's this weird party trick where he just absorbs. And I think that's what helps him have such a critical eye when making decisions on things.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people don't listen. They're not listeners. And that gets them in a lot of trouble. But you know what? I think because he's such a good listener, he has the upper hand always.
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of people will forget his ability to give a good callback to something. He always gets the last laugh because he's been listening.
He would be a great comic, but it's such a shitty life. Yeah. Anyway, Jay, if people don't know you, you were the culture guide for Queer Eye. I mean, that's really what put you on the map, even though you've done so many other things. But I always, you know, I like to research my guests, and I'm always fascinated with their childhoods. And yours is one that is quite interesting. You were born in Brentwood, New York. You are you're a Puerto Rican and Italian. You grew up in an evangelical Christian home with a single parent, a mother.
Yes. I mean, I don't know how much you know about evangelicals, but anything you've seen, if you saw that Mandy Moore movie back in the early 2000s called Saved, anything that's campy. I mean, if we've gotten great shows about the mega church movement, we went from a small church, which actually I thank them for my philanthropy every weekend, feeding the homeless and everything, but it was also women needed to be covered below their knees, wear a head covering, speaking in tongues, casting out of demons. So I'm 11, holding down full-grown adults who are in demonic possession. I mean, Kelly, who works at the bank. I mean, this is like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Saturday morning cartoons. I'm at a prayer breakfast in someone's house, holding down an adult as some other adult prays a demon out of them. And that was my normal. We eventually landed in a mega church that was, you know, cool, where the music sounded like the radio, right, just about Jesus. And at the same time, low-key going to Performing Arts High School and smuggling in burnt CDs of like Rent and Phantom and Les Mis, right, and right, writing Amy Grant. So I wouldn't get caught.
You know, I wonder, you're this young kid, you're in this church. I mean, you don't know anything different. I mean, we know a lot of people who, I mean, even regular, I mean, regular religions, but there are zealots in every religion, but evangelicals are not really prominent in New York. You know, right, I'm saying New York by the city, New York, I'm sure upstate New York there. And you went to public school, right?
I did, which was such a weird catch-22 because it was my window into pop culture. No TV, no secular music at home. So anything you learn about what's happening outside of your church community was what I learned at school.
At what age did you realize, wait, I am growing up in a way different household than everyone else I know?
Probably Performing Arts High School and having to make excuses for why my mother wouldn't come to things, or like, you know, why maybe I was ill prepared because I couldn't, listen to the music to memorize the songs. Right. There was like certain things that I started. I think the fact, Judy, that I had to keep it, I knew there were some things that I couldn't talk about.
But you know, like, you knew that you had to keep this evangelical situation a secret.
Right. In which already, I think when I was in it, I never fully bought it. And they have this scripture verse, like, train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he'll never depart from it, or something like that.
Right.
And it didn't work on me. I mean, I really felt the grooming and the indoctrination at a very early age. Here's what really tipped it. Because I was a singer, they positioned me to like always be, especially in the mega church, the frequent soloist. So I was backstage a lot, and I got to see people before they became the minister, whatever. I got to see them in their most authentic way. You're behind the curtain. You're like, huh, something's not right here. And then you see the pomp and circumstance when they get on a mic and you're like, okay.
This is a big show. It's all a show. Yeah.
Yeah, there was this, I was dating this girl because, you know, when you're gay, and by the way, did not even know what that was, but I knew I didn't like her the way, but you know, a Christian's got to save yourself to marriage. So I dated a former slut. This way people thought maybe something was happening.
Right.
And this new kid came into youth group and he was cool. He had a truck and he, you know, he always wanted to hang out with me and her. One day we drop her off home and he like starts hitting on me. And we are in my like parking like space at my house. And he literally basically tried like grabbing me or fondling me, whatever. And I got so anxious and nervous that I went inside. My mom was watching. My mom was watching. So she knew something happened. She kept it, talked to me the next day. And I told her exactly what happened. We go to the church. At this point, the straight guy went around telling my girlfriend that I'd come on to him. My mom saw the whole thing, so she knew.
Right.
So I got called into, this is a 2,500 person per service mega church. I got called in for the 6 pastors and they were like, you know, we heard you're trying to turn people that way, blah, blah, blah. And mind you, that's the closest thing I'd ever come to even doing anything with a boy.
Right,
16, 17. And they said, we prayed on this and we think you're lying and we've spoken to God. And when they said that, I was like, you're full of shit.
Right.
It was the first time my mom and I were on the same page. The fact that we knew something was happening and these men were confidently telling us, you're a liar. And God said, you're a liar. And we were like, wow. It was such a beautiful aha moment because a year later I'd end up like leaving to go play a queer character and using the character to sort of come out to my mom. But I had to own something I'd never done. So when I was leaving to go play a drag queen in Rennes, I came out, but I had never done anything. I just knew that my feelings toward guys weren't what I thought they were, which is I want to be like him emulate him. No, I just didn't know how this worked. And certainly you're not going to put things where poop comes out. So like, I thought it was a cruel joke only being played on me. I didn't know gay people growing up, or at least out ones.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. Was it just you and your mom? I couldn't find siblings
My dad left when I was three, and my mom, that was not uncommon, I think, in our family history. And right. I think I grew up with my grandmother. My mom had me young. We moved back in with my grandmother, who got remarried the year I was born. So my grandmother got her youngest daughter back and with a baby, and my grandmother was the local babysitter. So she raised me, and my mom and I always felt like siblings. And then living together when I was like 13 to 18, we felt like roommates. Right. So we never really had that. Like there was a moment where we weren't getting along, went to therapy, and the therapist said, Janet, he is your son. He's not your partner. He's not your equal. Like, so she didn't really know how to function with me. I didn't know how to function with her, but what came from that was we did not develop a healthy mother-son relationship, which really made leaving and going to like figure out who I was a lot easier. She then remarried the family friend the year I was born, and a baby comes in 2 years later when I'm 20, but she's married someone more evangelical than me, or we were. Yeah. And so then there was a lot of talk of, I don't want him around our son. He's going to make him that way.
I want to fucking punch his face in. Go ahead.
So you're going to die, but like, you know, so I moved to LA maybe 2006. He has to be at this point, I don't know, he's probably a kid, 6, 7 years old. And I have maybe met him twice. And then I think I flew them out because you try to buy your family's love like a sitcom. Because, you know, Lily Tomlin was in it and Reba, and I got them all things. I flew them out and did all the things. And I got to hang out with him then, but I was a stranger to him. So even though he was 12 or whatever he was, he didn't know me, you know? And Judy, he bought a ticket and came to my cabaret show.
No way.
Like last month. I met him as a 24-year-old grown-ass man with a girlfriend. It was the most bizarre. And my show talks a little bit about my upbringing. And I was like, how much do I need to dance around my relationship with my mother? I don't want to ruin his, but I realize he's a grown ass man at this point. And I think I never drag people for the sake of it. I just tell my truth and try not to like scorch the earth in the process. And what was beautiful from it was, because I do talk about the family dynamic a little bit, afterwards he was like, it's funny. He's like, I think we had our own level of crazy growing up, you know?
I didn't even think
about that. That he didn't have, just because he had two parents and they, you know, I thought he had a different experience than me, but people are who they are. And I'm sure my mother parented similarly, even though we were different and they had different dynamics. But to meet him as a grown person, because Judy, I didn't want to like reach out. Once he had social media, he followed me and I was like, I don't know how to like say, I'm sorry I wasn't around for you.
Not my choice though. It wasn't your choice.
I wanted to explain, I never wanted to disparage your parents. I never wanted to do any of these things, but I also didn't know what they told you about me. And I was like, so it's nice now to be able to form a relationship with him.
And you know what? I know because I'm a mom and a divorced one, that kids figure it out. They, you know, you don't have to tell them anything. They figure out the truth. So here you are, this little boy. You're in New York, you have this crazy sort of relationship with your mother and a crazy church. And it's just, you know, you're knowing and like intrinsically knowing I can't talk about this. It just reminds me. I mean, I knew I was gay when I was like three, but I knew you cannot talk about, like, no one tells you, just there's no representation anywhere. And if there is, on the very unlikely chance there is, it's not a positive one. And so that, which also makes me think how weird it is that there are still kids who take time to come out when we do have representation. I mean, it's still.
You said crazy, and I want to tell you, but you were accurate because when I joke, I'm trying to still in the process of repairing some kind of normal relationship that I can have with my mother, and I referenced something comedically about the casting out of demons, whatever, and she said, yeah, that was early on in my relationship with God where I was, you know, making mistakes. And so there was this interesting acknowledgement of, I knew that that wasn't right. And now in hindsight, I know that that's not where my belief system lies with all the practices right. that were very bizarre. And it was actually nice because I was holding on to God for her changed. What she told me he was changed from casual Catholicism to super evangelical to easygoing everyday Christian and all these things that were in between. And that my takeaway was she believes in all those things to this day. And so it was really right. interesting because I think there's a level of crazy of what we experience together that could comedically bond us. And I'm glad we can kind of lightly joke about it now.
What was it like just for someone who never experienced that, like watching these people get the devil taken out of, like what did that entail? And then when you left and you entered the real world and went to the diner or whatever, like, and had to enter society, like what was that like?
So it's two things. One, you're looking at the person and you never see them the same.
Again, afterwards.
Yeah, because you're like, were you faking it? Because I was faking. Right. Like, are we? It's a Ouija board. You're like, who's moving it? Right. And so like, for me, there's so many people that I remember that they'll follow me on Facebook or something. And I'm like, ooh. And then like, and then I'm thinking, what's going through their mind when right. people are holding them? They're slain in the spirit. So they faint. Now they're on the floor and people are like holding them down. And then they're getting aggressive verbally and like grunting and making, are you cosplaying the devil? I'm just curious, like what, and how do you know when it's over? Like, do you just have your frenzies and then you're like, it's been 10. I feel like we're good. Like the demon of jealousy. I mean, I don't know how it works. And I remember thinking like, how long are we doing this?
Right.
But the idea that there was also where it wasn't self-identified demonism, meaning like it wasn't someone doing something and like, oh, there's a demon, let's go cast it out. There was also like people in positions of authority telling someone, you have the spirit of blank in you and we need to get that out of you. So then there was like a set mission.
Oh, so they already knew. They already knew who they were. Yeah, who the devil
right.
was.
So they were like pulling out these things based on what they call a testimony. A testimony is like a share, an AA or something where people are, you know, maybe talking about something that they're struggling with or whatever. And they're like, and thanks to God, I'm really working on it or whatever. And then I think in my mind, the ministers or whoever would seize that opportunity as a vehicle and heal them from it. But it was a creepy, scary time. I mean, there was a lot of bizarre things. Like one of in this church, they had a pastor and they had evangelists that were like, they sat with the pastor. So it'd be like Evangelist Kim, Evangelist Prophetess, blah, blah, blah. And even saying it out loud sounds wild, but like there was one who faked a pregnancy.
No
for 9 months.
Way. No way.
Girl.
Did she ever get fat? Did she get the fake baby?
Put in a fake baby thing. Oh, and my mom God. Went to a we went to a baby shower. This is the same woman who, you're going to die. This woman, her husband, she got married to a guy. He came out as gay. And then I don't know if he was religious as well. That was before I was at this church.
Wait, he came out as gay before he got her pregnant?
After they got married. So then we had to set up a bridal suite for their reunion.
Uh-huh.
So we set up a bridal suite in the church, which had like some kind of random bedroom. That's when she decided, like nothing happened, but whatever. He didn't go to our church. So then she was pregnant and alone. And so we're always helping her out. And they went to a prayer bunch or something. And I think the pastor, who was female, kind of knew and basically was like, it's time to let it go. It's time to like, and she took out the stuffing. My mom was like, I was gagged. We all were like, oh,
but no way. When she told How me that, long did like, she do it for?
Well, like literally till almost term. Like literally,
no
like,
way. The, was,
I don't know oh what her plan my. Was, but I think about, but Judy, you're 15, you're 14, whatever right. I was, normal. That was like a normal occurrence.
So, wild. It's, that is so beyond.com.
The desire to not be wed to someone who's a homosexual, to see that as a failure, to try to fix them, and God fixed the problem because he blessed me with a child. What is she married? She's got an immaculate conception? Like, what the hell?
Right. What do you think their obsession with homosexuality is?
So I think it's a couple things. One, it's interesting to see how when I was in Rent playing a drag queen, my mother would be at church and, you know, people heard and they would say, oh, we heard about your son. We're praying for him. She said, pray for him. He's trying to be a woman on Broadway. Okay. Then 5 years later, I get Queer Eye and the mega church of cool Christians watched the show.
Of course.
And we're like, oh my God, we saw your son on that show. And my mom was like, I know. And we love it. He's so fat. And so part of it was social fear. What will right. they think of me? Because right. she quickly pivoted to pray for him to, well, you know me, I'm fabulous. So, you know, it's, he gets that from me. You know that, right? I get it. He gets it from me. There was an ownership suddenly when the world was like, we love that, you know, you, that he's famous, Trump's, he's gay.
Yeah, a parent's homophobia and not accepting, it's always about them and how people will perceive them. It's them and them and narcissism and them. Hey everyone, I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast, that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees. They have palm trees. They have evergreens. They have houseplants and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York. Okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome. You then go to, you went to a Christian school, but then you went to the Long Island High School for the Arts. Did you have to audition to get in there?
This is so wild. There was a vocational system on Long Island called BOCES, which had like, you know, you could go to school to be a photographer, a mechanic, and you do that in tandem half day with your required studies.
We had that in New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah. And they also had a performing arts high school. So when I found out about this in 11th and 12th grade, I asked to see if, because I met kids that were going, and I was like, oh, do you have to? So I reached out to the school and they said, you need to get permission from your district. I did audition, got in, because, you know, they're always looking for boys. That was the biggest game changer of my life, because I went from starring in all the high school musicals and stuff to doing my first number in my first class for musical theater, thinking I was killing it. You could not tell me I wasn't. And at the end of my first number, you know, you're like heaving and like giving jazz hands ready for, you know, the accolades. And the teacher just looked at me and was like, okay, a couple notes. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I was so shocked that I wasn't the best. You know what I mean? And so when I suddenly had pushback and notes and like from working professionals, like teachers were sometimes just out for a week because they were filming or whatever it was. You know, that was like so inspiring, because the discipline and like, I was never going to be good enough, you know, but like, I was never going to get the parental applause from them, which prepared me, because I graduate in June and I get rent that October.
But you had been singing in the church, right? You were singing gospel since you were 11, right?
Yeah, so you're doing 2,500 seats, so playing a theater of 1,200 on Broadway. I was like, that's all? That's it?
Yeah, of course.
I'm used to more, you know? Yeah. So like, that wasn't an issue. I think what was really trippy was I'd snuck out of school to see Rent, like a matinee on a Wednesday with classmates. And that was like in maybe April 1997 to get the show, like 6 months later or whatever, and look down at the seat that I paid $20 for in the front two rows, you're like, what is life? Wow. Like, this is so weird. Yeah.
You did your last 2 years there. You made new friends. Did you feel quote unquote normal?
I think I did, because because that was when the whole threesome thing happened with me and that girl and the guy. So my senior year, I was not going to church. The pastors literally said, like, we do not want you sitting with other, you have to sit with your mother. And I was like, screw that. I'm not going to church.
Fuck yourself. Who the fuck? Literally. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. So I was already kind of doing my own thing, but I think what I do like about, my church upbringing was that it gave me, my driving force is empathy as a person now. And, mm-hmm. and sometimes that works for me and sometimes it doesn't, but I'm able to, be devil's advocate before I open my mouth on things, to kind of just get where someone's coming from, even if I don't agree with their position.
Yep.
So when I was in school and meeting people who had these dreams, first of all, Judy, I don't know you can make money. I mean, obviously we're always struggling, but as performers, but I didn't know that people really had career. I never met somebody who thought they were going to do this forever. And that class was full of those people. But more importantly, my teachers, I was like, you were on this cast album. I'd open up a leaflet and see my teacher's name.
Yeah.
So that was, and then I was thriving in that school. I think I just needed someone to tell me it was going to be okay, that I was okay. And those teachers were like the first people that I somewhat came out to. And I think it's very weird to come out without saying I'm gay, but the understanding, when you date someone and they would say to me, you know, because they knew, there was an ease to that. And interestingly enough, if I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like my teachers gave me, I remember my senior monologue was like Paul's monologue from A Chorus Line, where he talks about doing a drag show and getting into drag and this. And then 6 months later, there I am. So there was a lot of things that were right on the money. Yeah. But it was the first time I felt like, there is a whole world of people that I feel really connected to that are out there. And even though I feel rejected at home and church,
but the fact that they had no, there was no baggage with anything they say, that they're just saying like, and matter of factly, and he, you must have been like, what? This is real? I wanted to ask if the church is still there. Is the church still there?
It is. And I occasionally Google it because I'm so curious, because, you know, I feel like when people talk about things like grooming and indoctrination, when they talk about the queer community in that way, I'm like, that's so funny, because the way you describe it is exactly what I experience from heteronormative, you know, modern day evangelicals.
It's amazing. It's amazing to hear it from the horse's mouth.
It was so heavy hand. I'm like, you're projecting how you want the world to be based on your faith. And your faith tells you, you need to go out and get these people. Queerness does not tell you that.
Oh my God. I know. We're not groomers. We don't even want you. You're an asshole.
Yes. We're picking up the pieces of the fucked up relationships that you broke with your kids who feel like nothing because of what you said and how you treated them. And what we're saying is we're encouraging these kids to love themselves as they are and telling them they have safe spaces. That's right.
And you were born perfect. You were born perfect. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with
you. You tell your kids all the time, the number one thing, just be yourself. Unless it's that, then don't be yourself.
So you graduate and you have, you get cast in the role of Angel at 18, youngest person ever to be cast in Rent on Broadway. And you had 9 callbacks. Is that true?
Girl, they really put you through it. Yeah, it was basically like casting director's assistant. I don't have an age or nothing, right? So my friend who went for performing arts the year before me, she sees my senior showcase. She's like, you need to get with an agency. I was like, how am I going to do that? I'm going to call my agent. They don't have anybody like you, blah, blah, blah. It's Abrams. So it's a bi-coastal agency. I don't know.
Oh, I know Abrams. I was with them. Yeah.
So I like borrow my uncle's suit, which is wildly ill-fitting, but I'm like, agent, got to be fancy. So I roll in. They give me sides, like audition material for like, you know, like NYPD Blue or something, playing like, you know, Latin, some kind of drug dealer kid. And then I do them and she goes, okay, it's great. Do you sing? And I said, sure do. And she said, closes the office door. I sing 3 lines from One Song Glory from Rent. She picks up the phone. I'm thinking she's getting me ejected. She calls the casting director. I have a kid in here today. Can you see him now? I know you're seeing people today. They say, yes. I get an appointment that day. I took the blazer from that jacket, wrapped it around like a skirt, went to Duane Reade, got lip gloss, went to the audition.
Had a
call back on the spot. I went to a payphone to call the agency and she goes, can you come back in? We want to sign you. Got signed, called back the next day. Then it was like director's assistant, choreographer, director, 2 sets of the producers and Jonathan Larson's parents. And then the producers, because they first sent me. Yeah. And so it was just like a bunch, but it kept on going. At the time, everybody was auditioning that much. So people were like, oh yeah, everyone goes in that much. And so when I finally got cast, it was a big deal, but then you also have imposter syndrome because you're working with people who have like Tony nominations and I've done like 15 Broadway shows, you know,
but there's a gift it when you're that young and you don't know, you know what I mean? You don't know. Oh my God, I can't fuck this up. You just think you're not going to fuck it up, but yeah. And you deserve 100%. To be there. What were Jonathan Larson's parents like?
They're still very involved with anything related to the production of any show. Alan Nan Larson were like the resident parents. Like they were always at the theater. They were so loving, so kind. I think, you know, every year on his birthday, we'd have like a cake or something. It was just a couple of years after he passed when I joined the company. And, you know, we're like, do you want to say anything? And they're like, they would always get misty and be like, well, wish he was here to see this, you know? And they never got over his passing. It was just so abrupt.
God. And
he never
and
got
the timing
to
know. Was awful.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that well. Oh, God. So you said that your mother, the reason you went right to New York and were auditioning, I read that your mother wouldn't allow you to go to college for musical theater because it might encourage this.
The exact quote was, it'll make you more that way.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't go to, so I didn't apply. I mean,
did you feel like all the kids were applying and you were like,
everybody. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, it was very bizarre because I'd moved from Brentwood to a more affluent neighborhood closer to the church, which was predominantly white church. And, you know, I think I was really good at keeping secrets because I wasn't telling people about our past and what we had done at the previous churches. And, you know, there's deep shame. There was always colorful language about where my dad was. And like, I was used to code switching and just kind of playing a role. So when it came to college, I would just dance around the issue.
Pun intended. Dance around. Get it? Pun intended. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my reality was I'll just figure it out later. And I just wanted to get out. Like, I just wanted to get out of the house. Yeah.
And you said that you loved playing Angel because it was like playing two characters, because you had Angel and you had Angel, the drag queen. And that really helped with your skills. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really important at the time, because when I came into the show, I'd never known anything about drag queens. And so I remember the director saying, Jay, you're not a girl. You're a boy in a dress. And then he gave me a copy of Tu Wong Fu on VHS, which I watched.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, there's that part where I think it's like, I can't remember, one of the, Noxzema Jackson goes up to Chi-Chi Rodriguez, played by John Leguizamo. It's like, little boy in a dress. Why are you crying, little boy in a dress?
Yeah.
So I model my performance after John Leguizamo's portrayal of Chi-Chi. And I remember him saying, look, I know the instinct is you're wearing these garments, but we don't want to see a shift of now you're a different person.
Right.
It's, you have to find how these people relate, even though you visually look like two different people.
Right.
And the power of that was, I think all of us have parts of ourselves, whether we are a business Judy or a mom Judy, there's some intersection,
but we
definitely behave and carry ourselves differently. And figuring out what that was really fun. Like, how to relate moments of the more sparkly drag Angel to when you're out of drag, and tying it all together and not being so different was really fun, and creating two separate vibes that kind of meshed perfectly.
Yeah. That was like graduate school for you.
100%.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Jay Rodriguez. This podcast was produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketed and booked and scheduled by Brittany Jo Sowards. Richmond. I got to meet her in-laws this weekend. Very nice people. Oh, just a reminder, this Thursday, I will be in Boca Raton, Florida. Stand up for Israel at the Boca Black Box. Shows at 7 and 9. This weekend, the Friday night and Saturday night, off Cabot in Beverly, Mass. One show at 8 on Friday. Two shows on Saturday at 6:30 and 9 p.m. Shout out to the Trinity College Bantams. From as I record this, they are undefeated. I feel like a poo-poo-poo because they do have a game today. Poo-poo-poo-poo-poo-poo. But they're doing great. And I really cannot thank you enough for listening to the end, especially you, Sam, who I met in Philly. I'm going to continue to speak out about Israel if it annoys you, and anti-Semitism if it annoys you, then I'm not sorry. It's something, you know, I never shut up about marriage equality for years, constantly talking about equality. You know, I've been a gay activist my whole life, and now I am a Jewish activist and advocate, because this is not okay. And people from Israel, okay, who have been to the United States cannot believe the amount of anti-Semitism and said they don't feel safe here. So that says a lot about our country and what is going on. So FYI, 75% of Jews who don't live in Israel live in the United States. We have been kicked out of every country. We come here. We made this country better. We contributed a lot to this country, as we do to the world. And yet here we fucking go again. And we're going to win. We're not going anywhere, people. We will survive. So on that note, I want to say, have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for listening to Kill Me Now. Please subscribe. Please leave a review. Please. Very important. For me to continue doing this. And also, I wanted to say, I keep hearing, no, I don't even want to say that, but I wanted to say, like, everyone's like, I love your rants. And I was thinking, oh, should I do a, what is it called? Patreon, where I just rant every week. I was thinking, but whatever, it doesn't matter. But those are things you can write to me about. And thank you. I love all of you. And as we always say, so long.